This is What Does It Profit? And I'm your host, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. In this show, we talk about value, the social and moral value of business. Each episode, each guest will bring me a little closer to finding out, what does it profit? Last week, we talked with Roberta McDonald, the co-op marketing powerhouse and Senior Vice President of Marketing at the Cabot Creamery Cooperative. Roberta taught us something very important, a lesson that farmers taught her. Time is the most valuable asset that we own. Thanks, Roberta. And thanks to all of those other extraordinary women whose legacies were celebrated during Women's History Month. All right, most of you know I'm a former investment banker turned business ethicist, and that I have the heart of a teacher, whether it's here with you or as a storyteller on Wall Street. And if you haven't figured it out just yet, I'll tell it to you straight. I'm on a mission. I'm on the hunt to bring you the angels of capitalism. These are the people doing the work of a new, more human-centered approach to capitalism. This week, despite being in the midst of a raging global pandemic, we're going to take a trip in your ears around the world. I'm going to introduce you to an economic historian named Paolo Santori, who is in Rome, and Miriam Costello, who is trained as an industrial engineer, but who is now describing herself as a human right to dream activist and a facilitator in Brazil. In our conversation, we're going to introduce you to the economy of Francesco, the global movement inspired by Pope Francis and the patron saint of peace himself, Saint Francis of Assisi. Paolo and Miriam share with us a glimpse of the incredible excitement and fruitfulness of what started out before COVID as a group of 2,000 young economists, entrepreneurs, and changemakers from around the globe. And now it's transformed into a global movement of young people and their cooperators who believe that now's the time to be bold and to build an economic future worthy of our humanity. And now let's welcome to What Does It Profit? Paolo Santori and Miriam Costello. Welcome, guys. How are you?
Hi.
Hi, Miriam. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for being here.
Oh, no, it's great. It's like being in a room with a bunch of pals. We're doing this remotely. So, Paolo, you're in Rome. Well, tell us where you are.
I'm in Rome. Usually I'm in Rome. Now I'm in Abruzzo, which is middle Italy. But still, yes, I'm here, you know, due to COVID restriction. But basically, I'm in Rome teaching and studying there.
And Miriam, where are you in the world?
I am in São Lourenço. It's a small town in Minas Gerais state, countryside in Brazil.
Okay, so you are in the middle of Brazil. Paolo is in the middle of Italy, and I'm in the middle of Washington, D.C. So
we are in the middle.
Yes, we've triangulated the world, which is such a nice symbol for the economy of Francesco.
Yes.
So let's tell our listeners a little bit about your background. So Paolo, you are a researcher in civil economy and a scholar in the history of economic thought. Did I get that right?
Yes, correctly. Yeah. I'm doing research basically in the philosophy, theology, and economics. And I really like history of ideas because it gives me a sense of freedom, you know, studying the history, the many ideas expressed by famous people. And yes, that's me.
Yeah. And listeners, Paolo's articles and books are the things I love to read in my spare time. So when I'm on the beach, believe it or not, I'm going a little nerdy here. It's the kind of stuff that Paolo's reading and the kind of stuff he's writing that I'm all excited about. So Paolo, it is a real joy to have you here in a lot of different levels. And we're going to get into the economy of Francesco in just a minute. But Miriam, I think of you as, you know, an industrial engineer, but the co-founder of something really cool called the Dream Factory. You're a human right to dream activist and facilitator. Did I get that right?
Yes, and also part of the Village Policies and Happiness in the Economy of Francesco. And we will talk a little bit more about this story about human rights children activist and the economist Francesca. So,
yeah, you're this vibrant young woman in engineering. And I think about how tough it is for women in engineering. And we'll talk more about that. But listeners, you can't see Marian. She's got this enormous smile on her face and she's shaking her head up and down. She's like, yep, you got me. You got me. Let's start our conversation out with some background about the economy of Francesco. So, Paolo, I'm going to lean on you a little bit for this. Explain to us this idea about the economy of Francesco. And the reason, listeners, we're asking Paolo to tell this story is that in his scholarly work, he was aligned right at the hip with the mentor and world-renowned economist who is the grandfather of what Paolo studies, Professor Bruni. Think of him as the sage. All right, Paolo, I've set this up. So tell our listeners about Professor Bruni and his relationship with Pope Francis and all of that.
Yeah, it all started with a meeting. This is beautiful. A meeting of three people. One was the Pope, the other Professor Bruni, and the third, the Bishop of Assisi, Domenico Sorrentino. It was in 2019. They were thinking to organize a Franciscan Davos, you know, to gather all the important economists of the world in Davos to rethink the economic paradigm, to change the economy.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there for just a second. So listeners, Davos is, if you're not familiar, as Paolo describes, it's a place in Switzerland where the entire elite of the economic world transcends on this beautiful, picturesque place, and they talk about conquering the universe. That's my way of describing it.
Yeah, no, that's basically.
you were talking about, you know, then let me get back to the story, the Franciscan version of that in Assisi as a very special place related to peace. So it has religious significance, but it has significance for people who maybe don't even come to their understanding of the world from a religious sensibility. It's a place of, you know, pilgrimage for people all over the world who find the idea of peace a part of their ethos. Okay, so you're in Assisi, you're talking with the bishop, you've got Professor Bruni, and you've got Pope Francis.
Exactly. So imagine this room. At a certain point of the conversation, Pope Francis say three times, very loud.
You have to say it in Italian.
Yes, banging his fist on the table. Voglio incontrare i giovani economisti. Voglio incontrare i giovani economisti. Voglio incontrare i giovani economisti. I want to meet young economists. Why young economists? Because Pope Francis understood that, of course, it's important to have Nobel Prizes, world leaders in Assisi. But what we need to change today's economy is young economics perspective. This is what he was looking for. And Professor Bruni and the Bishop of Assisi, they really enjoyed this news from the Pope.
What do you think their response was when they had the Holy Father? You guys heard me pounding on the desk here.
Yeah.
I was trying to replicate this whole experience. But what do you think their reaction might have been to the Holy Father's enthusiastic response to this?
Here I'm speculating a bit.
Of course, of course. This is fun. We're a podcast. What the heck?
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that the bishop at the beginning was a little bit surprised. Professor Bruni not. You know why? Because Professor Bruni, like 7 months before, organized another big congress named Prophetic Economy, when he asked 12 years old boys and girls to talk about economics. So it was in his soul also, this idea, you know, of young people talk about economics.
Oh, yeah. You get people like me. I'm 50 years old. We're kind of set in our ways, right? And we see the world with the institutions and structures that exist. And some of us just don't dream big. And I think that's something, I mean, would you agree, Marian and Paolo both, that young people dream big?
Yes, I would say that it depends. Depends on the context. This depends on how they have their needs, basic needs fulfilled, and what are the place that they are right now. This is really makes the difference for the ability to people to dream.
Yeah, no, you're right. And we're going to talk about your story. I mean, here you are in the middle of Brazil. I just heard on CNN that COVID is, we won't even go there just yet. We'll go there later in the conversation. But you have gone through tremendous times and continue to be in that place. So we're going to talk more about that. But Paolo, here we go. You know, it's the end of this prophetic meeting with these three really important decision makers. And then how did they decide to put together what ends up being a global youth movement?
Yeah, actually, with a simple gesture, the Pope wrote a letter of invitation. He said to all the young economists all over the world who shared with me the idea that the current economic system should be changed, not should be radically and drastically changed, but should be changed. There are problems. There are people excluded. Join me. Join me and meet me in Assisi in March. You know, that was the invitation. And a lot of people joined, Dawn, as you know, I mean.
Yeah, I was there as a senior advisor to one of the 12 villages. Yeah. Well, let's stop there, because I think the audience really needs to appreciate how the young people involved came together. So there was an application process. So how did that work?
Yeah, the application process was actually also practically simple. We asked people to send their, not only their curriculum vitae, of course, tell us who you are, but also your motivation for being there with us. Why do you want to be part of the economy of Francesco? Which part of Pope Francis and St. Francis of Assisi view of the world you like? Even if you are not, you know, religious or whatever, I mean, why do you want to change the current economic system? And so then, I mean, there's been a process of selection, but just for reason of spaces, Dawn, because I mean, the organizing committee said, let's take the 6,000 people who answered and bring them to Assisi. But for reason of security, as you can imagine, we just can choose 1,000 and then 2,000 at least.
So 2,000 young people from around the world were chosen out of this much larger group. So what that tells me is there's a groundswell of young people, and probably even more, who haven't yet heard about it. And hopefully our conversation will help bring some of those people into the movement. But I want to explain to listeners what was happening in the world at this time. The intention was to meet in Assisi in person. And so, Marian, I'm going to pull you into the conversation in a minute, because you have an interesting story about how you got engaged as all of this unfolded. But Paolo, quickly tell us what happened with COVID and how that changed the plans of actually meeting in person and the time periods involved.
Yes, I mean, we should have met in Assisi in March 2019, but in Italy, in March 2019, there was the first lockdown.
Oh, you mean 2020?
2020, sorry. Yeah,
that's right. Remember, everyone in the world, what was happening in Italy, if you saw the pictures in 2020. After China, it was really Italy. So, Paolo, you were in the middle of all that.
Yeah, we were in the middle. And the fact is that the meeting was had to be started in March, 19th of March. But then at a certain point, we had to cancel the meeting. And then we didn't know what to do. I mean, what's next? Because we worked a lot. We met the 2,000 people online, and we were ready to meet them in Assisi to create this movement. I mean, I was ready to see Miriam in Assisi, but then...
Paolo, I had my plane tickets. I was going to stay in Florence with a friend and then hop over to Assisi to be a resource to the Village on Finance and Humanity. So, Miriam, I want to ask you a question. I'm going to paint the picture for the audience. You were in Brazil doing your Dream Factory work. Tell our listeners for just a moment what you were doing. What is this Dream Factory and what was going on in your life at the time? Just before the economy of Francesco.
It all started, I was studying, and I saw a lot of people passing through depression and other mental issues.
So you were in school, in engineering, and is that where you were seeing this frustration and depression and kind of everything that was happening in the world?
Yes, so I was one of them, and then I started to talk with people, and I realized that most of them were unhappy and with lack of belongingness. So what happened is that even nowadays, we work together, study together for hours and years, and most of people don't know each other, don't know each other's dreams, don't know each other's stories. And besides that, with all inequalities, as I was saying before, a lot of people had their dreams denied or don't have the basic needs fulfilled. So we created Dream Factory to help people to connect and to rescue their dreams and give back their rights to them.
Yeah, let's paint the picture a little bit for those listeners who are not listening from Brazil. What was it like then?
Well, I think most of people, but I'm talking about my perspective. This is very important because everybody has different experience. Well, in my experience, it was a lot of people, when they choose to go to the university after high school, the people say to you, you have to choose something. And the school is not prepared to go through your talents and through your dreams. They just say, oh, if you are good in math, go and do something as engineer. If you are good in history, go and do history or something related to that. Instead of really merging all these things, I really like complex theory, and I don't believe that things are sharp as this, you know? We have to put all the things together and see what emerges, and we can have brilliant people doing brilliant things that maybe we are losing because we are not giving them the opportunity, and we're not saying to them, yes, you can be anything you want. We just have to prepare you for that, and let's open space for this. As Muhammad Yunus say, I like him very much. He says that everybody is a soil that can grow something, and that this has a lot to do with our village. Like, everybody can flourish.
Explain to us what that means to you.
I believe that it's like we have the soil, we are the soil, and we have the seed, and we are the seed. And dreams are seeds. And if we plant in a soil that allows it to grow, and if we put all the nutrients, so if we have sun, if we have water, and all the nutrients and all the space between, if we have all around us is good for us to flourish, that will happen. Our dreams will come true. Our humanity will flourish, and we will not go to a competitive mode. We will see that there is a space for everyone and that we can all thrive, and we don't have to take from someone or leave someone behind. That for me is how economy is right now. And that's what we are trying to change, to make economy for all and leaving no one behind.
Yes, I think that's so much the spirit of what we talk about on What Does It Profit, and is certainly the spirit of the economy of Francesco. So Paolo, there are these villages. So Marian referenced her village, which is the village that relates to policies and happiness. So these are like, what do you need to change in society so that we can start focusing on happiness? So just quickly, Paolo, what were some of the other villages?
We have 12 villages and all have a couple of terms, which you in your everyday life, you don't find. For example, work and care, CO2 of inequalities, finance and humanity, your village though.
Oh yeah, I live that every day, but I'm highly unusual.
Yeah, no, that you don't find that. I mean, it's not easy to put this village together. For example, another that I love is agriculture and justice, or another is energy and poverty. You know, I mean, really, to keep these dimensions together is very difficult. We are working it's 2 years that we are working to think about these topics.
Let's dive a little bit deep and ask Marian about her village. There were some really concrete, interesting ideas that came out of your village, and I want to talk about three of them. These are the big three, right? This idea of a penguin model for happiness and flourishing cities. That sounds kind of silly. I think of like one of the Disney movies about the little penguins that waddle around. Does that have anything to do with the way you think about penguins?
Yes, it does. Actually, it was based in the ways that penguins behave. So this project and who is working towards this project, they are really nice people and amazing people. One of them actually is based in New York. And what they're going to do is agglomerating big cities and foster vibrant small and medium-sized cities so people can access new opportunity and build a sustainable future in partnership with nature. Because when we talk about big cities, there's not that enough nature. And when we talk about well-being, this was we had a lot of professors talking with us during the year. And this was a topic that was very alive, that nature is very needed. And to reduce pollution, reduce depression, reduce all these things are very needed and urgent.
Well, you know that firsthand, I think, right? When you were discerning whether or not you were going to get involved with the economy of Francesco, let's tell our listeners how that happened. So you weren't part of this normal process that Paolo talked about. You came to it in I like to think of these, I don't know if you're going to like think about it this way, but in my mind, I'm like, this is the Holy Spirit working in the world, because there were people in your life that knew what you were doing. And pick up the story there. So you were doing this dream factory work, apart from what was going on at the economy of Francesco in the middle of Brazil. So then what happened?
So I was there and I have no religion, and I had this dream of making interreligious dialogues. And I met this guy that said, oh, this is really nice. There is this thing, this call of the Pope Francis, and maybe you should attend. It's really nice. And then I looked to it and I said, well, maybe. But I was very undecided. Like, I didn't know if I should go. Indecided. Sorry, it's my accent.
Yes, foreign words all the time. My listeners will just laugh at me, particularly Paolo, the Italian names. But Paolo's pretty easy. So, okay, Miriam, you're discerning. And so you decide to what? You went to nature?
So, yes, I was there and I asked some friends, should I go? Should I not go? And I had some deep conversations, but I was really like not knowing if I should. And then it was the last day, the very last day to send a yes and to pay as well, because the different currency was really in doubt.
Expensive, I bet.
And yes. And then I walked to the nature and I said, well, should I go? And then really two birds came, like very similar to the St. Francis birds. They came, looked at me, and they flew away. And I felt something like really something that I can't explain. And I said, okay, I'm going. And I went to my computer and pressed enter. And so I'm here in the Policies and Happiness Village with really nice people.
Yes, I know it's become a family, right? I mean, you had this idea that you were going to meet in Assisi and it didn't happen. And you had a year really, though, to get to know each other online. And it sounds like you guys have developed quite a family.
Yes, that was, I think, what if we had the meeting in March, I don't think we would be how we are right now. We are much more like we know each other. We know what each other do and how can we ask someone to do something. What are the talents? What are the dreams? We have projects that we build together through the year. So it was a process. It was not something that you go and do and go back home. I think maybe if it was March, that probably would happen. But now that we had the whole year working together, we call each other. So we give a happy birthday and all this stuff. We feel like family, and we work with frequency in our projects so they can develop. And I was afraid in the beginning that this could be something to, you know, that wouldn't thrive, that, we'll have the event and then it's not going to happen maybe anymore. But I really want it to happen. And what happened is that a lot of people want it to happen. And we are together and uniting forces to.
Yeah, I confess my age and my amazement on WhatsApp and the ability to connect people right from your phone without having to go through the layers of what us old fogies use in texting and cell phones and all that. When you're talking about a global reach, these technological platforms make it possible. So I guess, Miriam, just quickly, some of the countries of the people who are in the village, the Happiness Village, where are they from?
We have people from UK, Chile, more people from Brazil. We have people from Italy. We have people from Indonesia as well, and so on.
Wow. So when we get this episode out, your voices are going to be heard literally around the world. And hopefully they'll send them out to their networks. And so they'll learn more. Everyone will just continue to learn more about the economy of Francesco. So I know that there are two other very important projects, the Children's Flourishing Index and Inclusive Mapping for Flourishing Communities. You've got a huge agenda, which is very exciting and inspiring. And Paolo,
yes.
Your role, you had originally been intended to be the moderator of the in-person Economy of Francesco, but you got COVID.
Yeah, that was the plan. I mean, the plan was that I would have to moderate the event because you know that in November we did this online event, which was not a replacement of the March event. It was something different because Miriam is right. I mean, what we are experiencing is on life, not online, on life kind of relationships. And so I was supposed to present this event in November, but then, yes, I got COVID and I was in my room following on YouTube. But still, though, let me say, I don't want to be like irrealistic, but it was kind of like I was there. I mean, I really care about the also the well course of the event, also seeing the session from our village with seeing Miriam talking about our projects was.
Oh, yeah. We had Muhammad Yunus in the Finance and Humanity Village, and I watched him from my dining room table. So I felt like I wanted to be there. I was almost like to give him a fist bump and say, thank you for what you do. So I appreciate what you're saying. But so you actually had a replacement. You come from a Catholic background, but who was actually, I believe, Muslim. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. Yes, another person was chosen. And also, you will say that there, nothing happens for a reason, because also this tells something about the economy of Francesco. Of course, we start from the Vatican, from the Pope, from the Bishop of Assisi, but we are worldwide. I mean, everyone is welcome in the economy of Francesco. If they share our view about the economy, Miriam's view, my view, about the idea that you have to put the excluded people at the first place of every economic policy, they are welcome, independently of what they believe or not. So, I mean, this is, I said once, making a joke, that Economy Francesco, it's Catholic before Christian, because Catholic means, you know.
Universal, that's right.
Universal.
Yeah, that's Catholic with a small C instead of a big C.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So, I mean, that's the spirit.
Okay, so you didn't have the role that you thought you had, but now let's bring our listeners back to the next part of the story, which is the event has concluded, but it hasn't concluded the movement. So what became of all of this work that Miriam described, and I referenced a little bit in one of the other 11 other villages? What happened? What came next? You know, you've created an entity. So how is that conceived, and what is it in hoped to do?
But now it is, as Miriam said, Economy Francesco is a movement. After the event of November, there was so much joy, so much energy. I mean, really, the weeks after, even when we meet again with the villages, you know, life, it was amazing. But we have the problem to see the future, because we still want to meet each Economy Francesco movement in Assisi in 2021, but we don't know if we are going to do that. So now we are enlarging the community. So we are saying to people, you can join. And if you join at this point, it's like you have joined in the first place. I mean, because we are really an open community. The villages are still working. And in the villages, what is important for the Economy of Francesco is that the young people have the lead. But concretely, really. So, I mean, the villages are led, for example, in our village now, there is Miriam, there is me, and there is all the young people, you know, leading the Policies and Happiness Village. Then we are thinking to offer scholarship, because now Economy Francesco is seen also from other people in academia.
Yes, you started a school. Tell our listeners about the Economy of Francesco School. I think of it kind of as a masterclass. So it's more than a Zoom meeting where you just pop in casually. You actually have to prepare.
Exactly, exactly. It's the other side of the coin of the scholarship, the school. The school is, an online advanced training course on the topic of the Economy of Francesco. But what is really is another community building process. So each lesson of the school, we have the first 30 minutes, a keynote speaker, you know, so an important scholar. For example, we have just had Julie Nelson. She's an emeritus professor at the University of Massachusetts. And she was one of the first feminist economists talking about care and tell to economists, take care seriously, because it's important to consider care. We will have the Nobel Prize, Joe Stiglitz, that perhaps your listener.
Oh, everybody. Yeah. I mean, those of us, even on Wall Street, who don't just think about this intellectually, but just know like how our environment works, knows, you know, Stiglitz. I mean, you have pretty impressive name. So keep going. So you have the first 30 minutes where you've got these master teachers. And then what happens at the rest of the program?
And then since we are Economy of Francesco, the other 30 minutes, there are three EOF young discussants. So three EOF, Economy of Francesco, young economists who peer-to-peer to the keynote discuss his or her ideas. And this is how in Economy of Francesco we create knowledge. Because, of course, these important scholars come to us not to teach us what Economy Francesco is, but to enter in a dialogue with us. And this is the Pope's mandate. He told us, in November, he sent us a video message. He told us, take the lead. Otherwise, the history will pass over you. So, I mean, we are doing this seriously.
That's right. I guess I just want to interrupt there for just a second, and I'll let you finish, because I want our listeners to be able to go to the Vatican website or to the website of the Economy of Francesco, because you can find an English translation of those remarks that Paolo's just talking about. And they're, when you print them out, they're 6 pages long, and the richness of what's in that talk says so much. And actually, it was the inspiration for the title of this episode, Giving a New Soul to a Global Economy. You know, it was the Holy Father that, in his words, that, you know, brings these thoughts to life. So I'll take you back to the story.
No, just to conclude to the school, you know, what is amazing about the Economy of Francesco School is that the people who attend, and we had like more than 1,000 people subscribe, but also the keynote speakers, it's all for free. And this tells us something important, that gratuitousness does not mean zero value, means infinite value, because our lessons are of the quality of the debate, both of the keynote and DOF discussions, is amazing. I mean, we don't have to invite no one. I mean, and so to me, this is the most beautiful thing about the Economy of Francesco School. And all your listeners are welcome to join if they want.
How do listeners find you? So if they wanted to find out about the school or the Economy of Francesco, where would they go online?
Yeah, they have to go on Google and type Economy of Francesco. And we have a beautiful new website. And there they can find the information you were mentioning about Pope speeches, Pope letter invitation, but also all the news about the Economic of Francesco School. And we have also a newsletter for the people who use the email. And so they can keep updated.
All right. I'm going to ask you both two very important questions. These are our quintessential What Does It Profit podcast questions. And I'm going to ask the first one as it relates to each of you personally. So in your vocation to do this work, what does it profit? Meaning, what does it benefit your own soul?
Don, I have to be honest. For me, Economy Francesco is a school of gratuitousness, really, because of course I experience in my everyday life care for my family, for my friends, but I haven't cared so much about something as I'm doing for the Economy of Francesco. And when I was telling you that I was in my room following the event, not be part of that, not having any profit from them, but still I really cared. So for me, this is a school, I repeat, of gratuity, and it's magical. I mean.
Yeah. And now, Marian, you told us you were so generous with your story about the birds. As you reflect personally on this, how do you think your call to do this work profits your own soul?
I think being in service to others and to what's needed in the world right now, and also that we can share our talents of everyone, for example, in the village, and my talents as well, beyond any borders, by being youth. It's very important to have space that we can share our voice. And I could be with my mates in places that I would never thought before. And this is really amazing, like to be with people that are so big somehow to us, as Muhammad Yunus or Vandana Shiva or Pope Francis or Jeffrey Sachs, and be able to connect with them by equals. This is super powerful, and uniting people as change makers, academia people, and entrepreneurs together to make the change, this is mind-blowing. It's really, really important.
Oh, I totally understand. I had one of those experiences in my own journey. So let me ask you the last question I always ask guests, which is very similar to the one you just answered, but reflecting on a much more global or societal level. So I'll ask it this way. If society, and I'll ask you both to answer, if society adopts this new economic narrative that the economy becomes more human-centered, what will it profit the common good? So if you get to see a world incrementally changed or maybe even systemically changed in your own lifetime, what would it profit society?
For me, it profits bringing biodiversity in the world, which is very important, though. It brings biodiversity, Economy Francesco, in economics and in the real economic life. And why I am so... I stress this point, because for us, Economy Francesco is not an economy of salvation or a salvation in the economy, is to give people more alternatives, the more opportunities to choose the economic, an alternative economic path or the economic way of living they prefer. So in the end, the economy of Francesco is about freedom. And I think that the world really will profit now, but I see economy of Francesco in 10 years or in 100 years, it will benefit really, really much.
Okay, Marian, want to hear from you. What do you think from the middle of Brazil?
I have hope, a lot of hope. And I believe that this future economy, it's sooner than we think. And what I envision is a place where everybody can just be who they are and dream whatever they want to dream with ethics and love. And youth being heard, people really being in different places, diversity, different religions, having dialogue. That's what I envision. And an economy that has this new soul and people are happy, are really happy, and with their well-being fulfilled as well.
Well, I like to think, and I'll use this from my own faith terms, when there's joy, there's God there. So I just think all of this is fantastic. And I'm so glad that we had a chance to share just this little glimpse about the economy of Francesco, because I think you both agree that we could spend weeks talking about the depth and richness of what's been going on. So I offer that as an ongoing invitation for both of you and for all of your compatriots in the economy of Francesco. You guys are going to litter our guest list because you're doing great things. You are, as you said, the change makers, the entrepreneurs, the economists of the next generation. So we have, Marian, I'll steal a phrase from you. We have a lot of hope. So thank you both for joining us on What Does It Profit?
Thank you.
Thank you, Dal. It was amazing. Bye.
Really.
How do we say in your languages? How is it? Ciao?
Ciao. Yes.
Ciao.
Ciao. Ciao. Okay, we're like universal Portuguese and Italian, and I even in English understand ciao. Ciao.
Ciao.
You've been listening to What Does It Profit? Thanks to those who've gotten the word out about the show. This week, I want to thank all the amazing people who made my 3-day whirlwind tour through Manhattan last week possible. We could have an entire episode just about those few days, but for now, check out dawncarpenter.com to see just a few of the amazing photographs. For those of you who want to learn more about me and about the origin and future plans of the show, I want to invite you to join us for a Zoom happy hour called Jack After Dark, hosted by Georgetown University. The invitation is open to everyone, and a sign-up link can be found on the What Does It Profit podcast page on LinkedIn. Follow us there to keep up with the latest news with what's going on at What Does It Profit. In our next episode, we're going global. We may start in Boston, but we're going to spend some time in India with Megha Desai. Megha is a former ad agency protege who, after a decade in the business, answered the call of the ancient Indian philosophy of Dharma and has energized a newly transformed family foundation into a leading voice for the economically and socially marginalized women of India. Megha's amazing work has empowered women in ways that break centuries of marginalization. Until next time, follow us on social media to keep up with the show and to help us build the What Does It Profit community. Again, we're hanging out mostly on LinkedIn and Twitter at the moment. And please don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and tell your friends about the show. You can meet our team and sign up for our weekly newsletter on our website, whatdoesitprofitpodcast.com. What Does It Profit is written and hosted by me, Dr. Dawn Carpenter. The show is produced by Jordan Gaspore and edited by Switch and Board Studios. And the executive producer is me. Special thanks to our talented interns, Niels, Hannah, and Sean, other team members, and our long and illustrious group of friends and supporters can be found at whatdoesitprofitpodcast.com. Before I let you go, let me remind you to never stop asking yourself, what does it profit?